This is CBC News.
Good evening, I'm Dwight Smith.
And I'm Allison Smith. This is The World at 6.
Tonight, Helena Georges says allegations of her criminal behavior are ridiculous.
Defense Minister Peter McKay shoots back at allegations that Canadian soldiers killed an unarmed teenager in Afghanistan.
That is despicable, detestable evidence.
And Canadians have been getting ripped off at the gas pumps. The federal government wants to stop it now.
We're coming after you. We're going to be fining you. We're going to be inspecting you.
That's coming up later. But first, Allison has our top story.
There were denials all around on the Helena Georges affair today. Through her lawyer, Georges is vigorously denying the latest allegations from a Toronto area private eye. The ethics commissioner denies she's received any formal request to investigate the former Conservative minister, and the prime minister's office is denying it made such a request in the first place. Here to sort it all out is the CBC's Karina Roman.
Quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister did the right thing.
In question period today, Transport Minister John Baird fought off accusations that the government misled the opposition. On Friday, the Prime Minister said he had referred new allegations against Helena Georges to the RCMP and to the Federal Ethics Commissioner. But this is what Ethics Commissioner Mary Dawson told the CBC this morning.
I have not had an official request from the Prime Minister to investigate anything relating to Mrs. Georges.
That turns out to be the truth. The Prime Minister's office says it simply passed on information to the Commissioner. It was just a referral. Referral or request, critics say it's just semantics. Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch argues with or without a request, and with or without detailed information, the Commissioner has the power to initiate her own investigation.
I think there is enough information in the media reports to raise reasonable grounds to investigate. Essentially, she's just not doing her job and seems to be actively trying to not do her job.
NDP MP Pat Martin was key in getting the Federal Accountability Act passed. He does not blame the commissioner, but blames what he calls the Conservative government's culture of secrecy. Martin says ethics cannot be legislated, and when there's a lack of transparency, bad behavior can flourish.
Canadians must be shaking their heads because they thought a whole new regime of transparency and accountability had come to Ottawa. And they must be terribly disappointed to learn there's either loopholes or inadequacies that allow this kind of mischief to still be taking place.
Meanwhile, new allegations against Georges seem to be revealed through the media almost every day. Offshore accounts, association with drugs, ethical breaches. Many of those accusations appear to come from a private investigator who is digging into the business of a man who was a prospective business partner of Georges' husband, former MP Rahim Jaffer. Georges issued another statement today through her lawyer. Her lawyer says considering that man, Nazim Galani, is facing fraud charges himself, the source of these allegations cannot be trusted. And Georges denies all of what she calls bizarre claims, and she says she is looking forward to helping the RCMP demonstrate they're false. But the RCMP has yet to say what, if anything, they plan to do with the allegations. Karina Roman, CBC News, Ottawa.
That business associate of Rahim Jaffer is issuing some denials of his own. Nazim Galani's spokesperson now says Galani was overenthusiastic when he claimed Rahim Jaffer had opened the door to the Prime Minister's office. As for those sensational allegations from a Toronto-area private eye involving cocaine, parties and prostitutes, Galani says none of them is true. The spokesperson also says Galani will accept an invitation to appear before a parliamentary committee where he hopes to clear up any ongoing allegations.
The Harper government took heat on another front today as the opposition renewed its calls for a full public inquiry into the detainee scandal. Former translator Ahmed Shah Malgari testified yesterday that Canadian soldiers killed an unarmed teenager and later tried to cover it up. He also says military interrogators routinely sent detainees to the Afghan secret police to be tortured for information. Today, Malgari spoke to the CBC. James Cudmore has more from Ottawa.
Given the nature of my work and my position, I had access to everything.
In an exclusive interview today with CBC News, Ahmed Shah Malgari says after what he saw in Afghanistan, he can't trust the government or the military to investigate his startling allegations.
I don't want the military men in uniform to investigate a man in uniform because the public will never know the truth. What I want is that should be an independent body. Look into it, and then the facts will come out.
Ahmad Shah Malgri is an Afghan-Canadian who volunteered to go to Kandahar to translate for Canadian soldiers. Yesterday, Malgri told a parliamentary committee Canadian interrogators purposefully took advantage of the Afghan secret police's propensity to abuse its prisoners.
If the interrogator thought a detainee was lying, the military sent him to NDS for more questions. Afghan style. Translation, abuse, and torture.
That testimony yesterday led to an uproar today in the House. Liberal defense critic Ujjal Dosanjh says following Malgri's testimony, the government must now act.
When will they shed their cowardice? When will they have the courage to put these allegations from the generals, from the translator, from Colvin, from Anderson, to a sitting judge so that we can have some truth?
Defense Minister Peter MacKay says there is no need for an inquiry.
When specifically asked, do you have first-hand account? Do you have proof that this happened, Mr. Speaker? He said no.
Whoops.
And then, as ministers often do these days, when faced with tough questions on detainees, MacKay accused his opponents of disrespecting the soldiers of the Canadian Forces.
That is despicable, detestable evidence.
And indeed, Malgri does today feel despised. Once a proud servant of the crown, nicknamed Pasha, Arabic for lord or king, he's now been attacked by the government, accused of making things up. A far cry from his days as the trusted advisor of the Canadian commander in Afghanistan.
They needed me, and I was Pasha. I was gratified. Now they don't need my service. I've been nullified.
James Cudmore, CBC News, Ottawa.
The skies over Britain and much of Northern Europe are silent tonight. An erupting volcano has sent a huge cloud of ash drifting over European airspace. It's shut down all of Britain's airports and disrupted air traffic on the continent and beyond. Tom Perry reports.
All flights at Heathrow are currently cancelled.
The skies over London were blue today, but Britain is a nation under a cloud. High up in the atmosphere, a layer of volcanic ash has shut down the country's airports and left travellers stranded.
My suggestion would be to go home tonight and try again tomorrow. I don't think anything will fly until tomorrow.
Passengers who showed up at Heathrow Airport today found out they weren't going anywhere. David Bensadoun, in London on a business trip, was trying to get home to Montreal.
Yeah, my wife's pregnant, and tomorrow is the ultrasound to find out if it's a boy or a girl, so I wanted to get home. I'll miss it.
Every flight into and out of the UK was cancelled as of midday. Flights will stay grounded until tomorrow at the earliest. There are disruptions and cancellations in other places too, including Norway, Sweden, Finland, Belgium, and France. And it's all because of a volcano erupting in Iceland. Bob Jones is head of flight operations at Britain's Civil Aviation Authority.
We haven't experienced this sort of airspace closure since 9/11. And we have experience from the past, there is evidence from the past, that basically volcanic ash and jet engines don't mix.
Eric Moody knows that firsthand. Back in 1982, he was captain of a British Airways jumbo jet that flew through the plume of an erupting volcano off Indonesia. The ash nearly brought down the plane.
It abraded all the windscreens. You couldn't see out through the windscreens. It abraded the lens of the landing lights. They didn't work. It took all the paint off and it stopped all four engines.
This is due to volcanic ash.
Moody and his crew were able to restart their engines and land the plane safely. But he understands fully why aviation officials decided today to halt flights. The fine powder being blown into the atmosphere by the Icelandic volcano is a mixture of rock, sand, and glass. Any airliner flying through it could suffer the same fate as Moody's plane, with its engines seizing up and shutting down. It's just too risky, and so for now, the skies over Britain are a no-fly zone. Tom Parry, CBC News, London.
Meantime, Air Canada has cancelled all flights to and from London's Heathrow Airport, Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, and the Frankfurt Airport until further notice. Air Transat has nixed all flights to Heathrow.
I'm Greg Rasmussen. Mortgage rates are up and new, tougher rules on buying a home kick in next week, all at a time when there are bidding wars in some cities and the average single-family home price in Vancouver has hit $1 million.
And right now, if you're buying residential real estate, you are buying at excessively high levels in many parts of the country, primarily Toronto and Vancouver.
Will the party continue, or is the real estate market irrationally exuberant? I'll have that story later on The World at 6.
Rescue workers in China are battling strong winds and altitude sickness as they search for survivors of yesterday's series of powerful earthquakes. More than 600 people were killed and thousands more injured in the mountainous Qinghai province near the border with Tibet. China's president and premier have both canceled international travel plans to take a direct role in managing recovery efforts. Our China correspondent Anthony Germain reports.
State television video broadcast across China shows a throng of rescue workers in bright orange jumpsuits as they crouch around a crevice formed out of the debris of a collapsed building. The anticipation grows, somebody shouts, "He's alive," and they pull out a 25-year-old disoriented Chinese man covered in gray dust. At another pile of wreckage, army soldiers in camouflage uniforms find a woman wedged between fallen slabs of concrete. They shove a stretcher inside the hole. The woman tells her rescuers to take it easy. "Hey, don't tear my clothing," the woman says, as she's carried away to an ambulance. More than a day after several earthquakes struck Qinghai province, survivors are still being found, but so are dozens of corpses. Another task is caring for an estimated 100,000 people who have lost their homes. Chinese authorities say 15,000 dwellings, most of them constructed out of mud and wood, collapsed, and so far only a couple thousand tents have been delivered. Transportation remains a problem because the roads and bridges are heavily damaged. Relief supplies are only trickling into the disaster zone. During the Sichuan earthquake 2 years ago, China's premier Wen Jiabao won widespread praise for immediately hopping on a plane and directing the relief effort, and for showing a kinder, caring style of communist leadership. Wen arrived in the region late in the day to announce the government will pull out all the stops to make sure people get help, and President Hu Jintao is leaving South America early to also tour the disaster area. Anthony Germain, CBC News, Beijing.
The president of Kyrgyzstan has left his country for neighboring Kazakhstan. Kurmanbek Bekiev's departure is quelling fears of a civil war in the Central Asian nation. More than 80 people died in a violent uprising against the government last week. Bekiev has said he would resign if the interim government could guarantee safety for him and his family. They granted it for him, but refused security for his family.
This is an official day of mourning in Canada following the plane crash that killed the president of Poland and 95 others. Thousands of Polish Canadians are gathering at memorials around the country. Prime Minister Stephen Harper attended this one in Mississauga, Ontario. Polish President Lech Kaczynski, his wife, and a number of high-ranking government and military officials died when their plane went down in dense fog in western Russia. A state funeral will be held for Kaczynski on Sunday.
Next, an update on a story we told you about yesterday. Those disturbing allegations of students abusing students at an elite private school in Winnipeg. Four teenagers have now been charged. They're accused of forcible confinement, uttering threats, and sexual assault with a weapon. Leslie McLaren has the latest.
The 18-year-old accused in this case appeared for the first time in court today. CBC's not naming him. The slight young man was clean-shaven and dressed in a prisoner's smock. He looked resigned when the Crown said it will oppose his bail application tomorrow and said releasing him would decrease confidence in the public administration of justice. The 18-year-old was a boarder at the school. That privilege costs up to $40,000 a year. Sheldon Pinks is his lawyer.
My client's only 18, and needless to say, he's never been involved in the justice system before. Obviously, he's sitting in a jail for the very first time in his life, so it's expected that he will be a little bit unsettled by that experience.
The other three accused are minors. Two are 16, the other 17. As CBC reported yesterday, up to 15 younger boys in grades 8 to 10 at the school were allegedly threatened they would be sodomized with a walking stick. Today, Winnipeg police widened their investigation of the incidents that date back to last fall.
Just the fact that it is a sexual assault against a child, that is serious to us.
Constable Jacqueline Chaput says police interviewed the first victim yesterday. That's when the investigation went from claims of assault to allegations of sexual assault. Chaput says police are all too aware they're dealing with victims who are children.
We definitely don't want them to be re-traumatized by the questions.
The head of St. John's Ravenscourt, Stephen Johnson, says the investigation has taken a far more serious turn than he expected.
It's clearly got a component to it that was beyond, I think, my original estimation a week ago.
I just feel terrible for these kids.
Brett Basher graduated from the school 2 years ago. He lived in the dorm twice in grades 9 and 12. Basher says teasing was normal. He's shocked, though, to hear four students have been charged. But he says it's not surprising that the school was in the dark for so long.
These are young men, and, you know, they're very uncomfortable with who they are. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage to say something. It's not surprising at all how someone could harbor something terrible that happened to them for so long like that, just because they'd be scared to come forward. You know, they're still young people.
Police say further charges are pending. Leslie McLaren, CBC News, Winnipeg.
The federal government is promising to get tough on gas stations that cheat consumers out of the fuel they pay for. Industry Minister Tony Clement has introduced legislation aimed at stepping up inspections of gas pumps and slapping owners with stiff fines if the machines are flawed. Clement says the proposed Fairness at the Pump Act will save consumers millions of dollars. Kurt Petrovich reports.
Corey Cummings doesn't think much about the gas he's pumping into his SUV.
This little beast is about $100.
And when he hears the government's proposing a new system to inspect pumps to make sure he gets what he pays for, his first question is, how much is this going to cost?
A little cynical, yeah.
Industry Minister Tony Clement says in some cases, customers have been charged as much as $2 extra on a fill-up by faulty gas pumps. The government's own data shows 6% of pumps, or about 1 in 20, are wrong. And Clement says sometimes it's deliberate.
Yeah, I know it's a small percentage of the number of gas pump operators, but to all those chiselers who might be listening in, we're coming after you. We're going to be fining you. We're going to be inspecting you. And we just will not tolerate this in our society.
Clement wants to step up inspections from about 8,000 a year to 65,000 with the aid of private inspectors. Operators will foot the bill and face fines of up to $50,000 for repeat offenses. The Canadian Petroleum Products Institute, which speaks for nearly all the major oil companies that operate gas stations across the country, questions Clement's use of the term chiselers. Vice President Ted Stoner says frequently errors are in the customer's favor.
Unfortunately, it sounds like the minister's just looking at the one side of the coin.
But Clement says most of the time it's the company that benefits from faulty pumps. And Bruce Cran, president of the Consumers Association of Canada, is applauding the proposed changes.
Consumers have every right to expect that they get full measure and full weight for anything. And I think, therefore, this is a step in the right direction because we haven't had it up to date.
Well, the government claims the changes will save consumers millions of dollars. Cran says his association will also be watching to see how much the new inspections end up costing consumers. Kurt Petrovich, CBC News, Vancouver.
The Toronto stock market moved slightly higher amid strong economic data from China. The TSX gained 7 points to close at 12,202. The Dow Jones added 21 points, the Nasdaq was 11 points higher, and the Canadian dollar lost 0.4 of a cent to close at 99.67 cents U.S.
If you live in Toronto or Vancouver, you likely don't need to be reminded the real estate market is booming. In fact, in most markets, the most recent numbers show prices are at or near record highs. But rising mortgage rates, tougher mortgage rules, and a flood of new listings could change that. And some economists are now warning that the bubble may be about to pop. Greg Rasmussen reports.
The main floor doesn't feel like an apartment.
Yeah, the main floor doesn't feel
like it. Yeah, it feels like a home.
Yeah.
Realtor Adam Parsons shows a potential buyer the latest offering, a $699,000 townhouse in a prime location in Toronto. It's spacious but needs some updating. The person doing the shopping is Kareem Sethi, a 30-something looking for an investment property.
Rates have been going up. I'm pre-approved, locked in already, but I have to actually have some urgency to buy something now before that approval sort of disappears or expires.
Sethi has been looking since December and has seen bidding wars send prices far above asking. But he says he's recently noticed a change.
There's a lot more activity in the market in terms of supply coming on board. And that, I think, bodes well for buyers.
New numbers released today back him up. Nearly 100,000 homes hit the Canadian market last month, setting a new record. Gregory Klump is the chief economist for the Canadian Real Estate Association.
Half of the increase in the national numbers for new listings were attributable to increases in the two very hottest markets, Vancouver and Toronto. So certainly buyers there are facing more choice this spring than they have in previous months.
Across the country, prices are up nearly 18% from a year ago, with the key markets of Toronto and Vancouver leading the charge. But some say it won't last.
There is going to be a cooling off in the Canadian housing market second half of the year into next year. The question is going to be by how much.
Dave Rosenberg is chief economist with the investment firm Gluskin Sheff. He says there's an unhealthy housing mania in some cities. His firm's economic models show prices are overvalued from 10 to 30%, depending on the city.
I think there's a lot of people out there who are still renting who might be relishing the opportunity at getting into the housing market at better pricing. They'll be the winners. And I think people that are jumping in right now in the hope of catching future price appreciation at these already record levels, may be the ones that end up being the losers.
450, 25.
In his Vancouver office, mortgage broker Ajay Soni's fingers fly over the calculator. He says there's a backlog in mortgage applications as people try to lock in at older, lower rates.
We're going to probably have quite a buying frenzy here for the next few months.
Upcoming tougher mortgage rules are also spurring people on. For instance, if your house contains a rental suite, you'll soon need a higher salary to qualify for a mortgage.
So in the old system, you would need an income of $68,000 to qualify for that mortgage. In the new qualifying guidelines that are set up, you need $92,000. That's a significant increase.
Sony says real estate markets are driven by a combination of money and emotion. He says there's still a strong belief in the value of owning property, but says people need to be smart with their dollars in case higher rates and tougher rules cause prices to drop. Greg Rasmussen, CBC News, Vancouver.
This is The World at 6 on CBC Radio 1.
We're on the internet at cbcnews.ca and our latest podcast. Go to cbc.ca/podcasting.
You can also hear us across North America on Sirius Satellite Radio 137 and around the world on Radio Canada International.
At the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, President Barack Obama unveiled the next chapter of the U.S. space program. Excuse me. Obama says he's 100% committed to NASA and its future, boosting its...
He wants to boost the budget by $6 billion over the next 5 years. Now, the new milestones include deep space exploration.
By the mid-2030s, I believe we can send humans to orbit Mars and return them safely to Earth. And a landing on Mars will follow. And I expect to be around to see it.
Washington also aims to extend the life of the International Space Station by at least 5 years. There are also plans for NASA to partner with private companies to help send astronauts to space more affordably. And while Obama looked to the skies, across the United States, members of the Tea Party movement turned out in force to voice their anger at his administration. They chose tax filing deadline day to express their passion for smaller government, lower taxes, and more personal freedoms. Tea Partiers staged their biggest protest in the city they love to hate, Washington, D.C. Michael Colton reports.
All these and more are a violation of the supreme law of the universe.
On Freedom Plaza, the rally opened with a rather ungodly prayer aimed at the White House just two blocks away and the president who's in it.
His rulership is a great curse upon the people. For when he will not serve as a minister of God, he becomes none other than a minister of Satan.
Out on the plaza, people did not call Obama the devil, but they did claim everything he's been doing has been a curse on the country and on them.
Well, thanks to President Obama, I lost my job.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, because he's wrecked the economy with his lame bailout plan and not doing...
Kevin Wasnot from Pennsylvania was in a crowd that started off 1,000 or two strong and just kept on growing.
The government doesn't do what we want them to do or what we feel is best. They're doing what's making them money.
They pretty much lied to us in school how it was a free country. Now I just see it as a socialist country.
Krissa Robertson, a young mother from Kentucky, was pushing her two toddlers in a stroller.
I lost my job, job cuts. You know, I had to go on welfare, which I am not really for because they cut my jobs. It's like, can't you just give me a job instead of giving me a food stamps?
At times, at the edge of the plaza, things got heated.
You hate the president! You hate the president!
Some passersby stop, gawk, or just shake their heads at the placards the Tea Partiers carry. Some read, "Don't tread on me," with a picture of a curled rattlesnake, or "Obama, this is not Moscow." Other onlookers weren't buying it.
When George Bush was running up deficits and not paying for the entitlement, when he wasn't paying for both his wars, I didn't see the Tea Party then. Where was the Tea Party at then?
Some military veterans in the crowd, and there are lots of them, like Glenn Quater, say they no longer even recognize their country.
It's not defined anymore. What are we fighting for? You were fighting for the American dream, American spirit, protect the Constitution, and all that stuff. And it's just being devastated in this town.
God, country, family.
After the warm-up rally near the White House, the crowd moved a few blocks down to the National Mall, hallowed ground that they claim is being sullied by a big, arrogant, and indifferent government that's turned on its own people. Michael Colton, CBC News, Washington.
She's been called Canada's Rosa Parks. In 1946, Viola Desmond, a black woman, sat in a whites-only section of a Nova Scotia movie theater. It was a crime then, a conviction that Desmond carried with her to her grave. The CBC's Stephen Puddicombe was there today as her family proudly accepted an apology and a pardon on her behalf.
I never thought I'd see this day or this.
Yeah.
Never,
yeah.
Ever in my wildest dreams. Yeah.
Wanda Robson smiles as she thanks Nova Scotia Premier Daryl Dexter for pardoning her sister. Back in 1946, Viola Desmond was jailed and fined after being dragged from the whites-only section of a New Glasgow theater. Desmond spent the night in jail for the crime. She was fined $20 as well as $6 for court costs. She was actually convicted of tax fraud of a penny, the difference between the tickets for whites and blacks at that time. Desmond is referred to as Canada's Rosa Parks. In 1955, in Montgomery, Alabama, Parks refused to move to the back of a bus to make room for white passengers. During today's ceremony in Halifax, many in the audience were moved to tears and to laughter when Wanda Robson spoke of her sister.
I really am so thrilled to be here today. I'm numb. Now, I'm 83, so don't run for paramedics. I'm not numb that I'm going to be sick. I'm numb with joy.
Viola Desmond, who died in 1965, was granted what's called a free pardon. That's when the government admits a conviction was an error and the person in question was innocent. It's the first time one's been granted posthumously in Canada. Stephen Puddicombe, CBC News, Halifax.
So with most of my voice back, I'll sum up. Denial is the name of the game on Parliament Hill. Lena Georges vigorously denies the claims from a Toronto area private eye. The Ethics Commissioner denies she's received any formal request to investigate the former Conservative minister. And the Prime Minister's office is denying it even made such a request in the first place.
An erupting volcano in Iceland has spewed a huge cloud of volcanic ash into the skies over Britain and much of Northern Europe. It's closed down Heathrow Airport and disrupted air traffic on the continent and beyond.
And that's our program for this Thursday, April 15th.
It's one you'll never forget. The World at 6 from CBC National Radio News. I'm Dwight Smith.
And I'm Allison Smith. Have a good night.
Good night.